Welcome to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio, your source for learning more about fly fishing in cold water, warm water, and salt water. Hello, I'm Roger Maves, your host for tonight's show. On this broadcast, we'll be featuring Frank Wood, and he'll be answering your most important questions on lake trout on the fly. This show will be 90 minutes in length, and we're broadcasting live over the Internet. If you'd like to ask Frank a question, just go to our homepage at askaboutflyfishing.com and use the Q&A text box to send us your question. We'll receive your question immediately, and we'll try to answer as many of them as possible on the show tonight. And while you're there, make sure you sign up to receive our announcements so you don't miss out on any of our future broadcasts. Just fill in your name and email address on the form on our homepage, and we'll keep you informed. This broadcast is being recorded and will be available for playback on our website within 24 hours after the show ends. So if you have to leave early, you can return to our website at your convenience and listen to the broadcast at any time. The content of this broadcast is copyrighted and the property of the Knowledge Group, Inc., doing business as Ask About Fly Fishing. Recordings or transcriptions of this program cannot be distributed or sold in any form. When we return, we'll be talking with Frank Wood about lake trout on the fly. This segment of our show is brought to you by the Orvis Company, makers of fly rods in the USA since 1856, and still on the cutting edge with their award-winning Helos fly rods. Check out their premium quality flies like Copper Johns, Beadhead Princes, and Elk's Hair Caddis, all for only $1.50 at www.orvis.com/flies. That's www.orvis.com/flies. Fill your fly box this season at an incredible price. Find out more about all the great fly fishing products Orvis has at www.orvis.com. That's www.orvis.com. Before we introduce Frank, we'd like to let you know about the great gifts we have to give away tonight. For our drawing tonight, we'll be giving away a one-year membership to the Federation of Fly Fishers and a one-year subscription to Fly Fusion magazine. So you have two chances to win tonight in our drawing. Now, if you haven't registered yet for the drawing, you can do so now. Just go to our homepage at askaboutflyfishing.com and look for the link under Frank's section that says, click here to register for our drawing. Click on that link and fill out the form, and we'll announce the winners at the end of the show. We'll also be giving away a $20 gift certificate courtesy of Front Range Anglers in Boulder, Colorado. And that gift certificate can be redeemed either online or in their store. So here's how you can win. You must be the first person to answer the question we ask at the end of the show. And the question is going to be about something we talk about during the show. You must submit your answer along with your name and location using the text box on our homepage. So listen closely, use your best typing skills, and maybe you win that $20 gift certificate. Tonight our guest is Frank Wood. Although he has been fishing for as long as he can remember, Frank didn't pick up his first fly rod until he was 16. The year was 1978, and he took to the sport after watching a fly fisherman plying his trade on the Dunk River in Prince Edward Island. In 1994, Frank started Streamside Adventures, the first guided fly fishing company based out of Edmonton. 1995 saw him develop a fly fishing program for Edmonton Public Schools, and in 1997 he started working with Alberta Tourism Education Council on Freshwater Fishing Guide Certification Program. His work on the latter paid off in 1998 when he became the first nationally certified guide in Alberta. In 1998 was also the year that Frank started to dabble in outdoor writing. Initially, his stories were published in the Edmonton Sun Outdoor section, but soon after he branched into magazines and contributing stories for books. Frank became a full-fledged member of the Outdoor Writers of Canada in 2005. Not only was he writing, but he also had taken up the hobby of photography to support in support of his stories. Frank also started to teach fly fishing courses again, only this time with Calgary Parks and Recreation. Free time started to become somewhat strained, so he made the difficult decision to discontinue guiding. And currently he's working on three books, several magazine stories, a couple of photo essays, all the while trying to figure out this e-publishing thing. Somewhere in there, he still takes time for his family, and if he's really good, he still gets to go fly fishing. Well, Frank, I'm glad you still get to go fly fishing, and welcome to our show.
Well, thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, that's what we're all about here is fly fishing. So, and you have been out and about chasing lake trout, right?
Yeah, for a number of years now. I guess I started probably in 92. Fishing for them up in the Northwest Territories primarily, but since then I've also been fishing for them here in Alberta as well.
And what attracted you to lake trout? How'd you get started?
Well, I mean, I've always been a fan of any char, really, because when I first started fly fishing in Prince Edward Island, it was for brookies in the little creeks that were near my home. And since moving to Alberta, I've become a real fan of fishing for bull trout, another char. And in my earlier days in the military, I got to fish for Arctic char up in Northwest Territories again. And Lakers were just another one that added to the mix. And really, what did it for me is I used to go up the last week in July, first week in August, and head out to the east arm of Great Slave Lake with a buddy of mine that was stationed at the air base in Yellowknife. And he was a spin fisherman, and I'm a fly fisherman, and we would fly fish for grayling, we would fly fish for pike. And then when it came to the Lakers, we'd haul out the hardware, and I thought, well, you know, surely I can catch these critters on a fly rod as well as any other species. So that's really was the start of it, is trying to catch them on a fly rod.
So tell us a bit about the lake trout. You just said char. So are we talking about a trout or a char?
They're classified actually as a char. They are called lake trout, but yes, they are a member of the char family. So they're more correctly, they are a char even though they are called the lake trout. But for all intents and purposes, as far as I'm concerned, they're a trout.
Okay. And tell us a little bit about a lake trout. What is this animal?
Well, it's certainly a highly adapted creature over the eons. It's adapted to closed systems, to deep, cold lakes that are really left over from that were carved out from the last ice age. You do occasionally find them in rivers, but they're rivers that are usually inlets or outlets to lakes. But it's these deep, dark, cold lakes that have a high oxygen content that where they've thrived and lived. But not only do they have the highest, they're the most widespread of the trout species, or char species, if you will, but they've been stocked in many, many lakes across North America over the years, so their distribution is quite a bit further than their native range.
Okay. What was their, so what do you consider their native range? How far south?
Well, pretty much along the 49th parallel, but then that's extended even further because they're also native to the Great Lakes as well. So, but predominantly, their native range happened to be in the northern part of North America.
Yeah, it seems like there's a lot of reservoirs that must have been stocked with them because, you know, people are pulling them out of, you know, deep rigging and going down for them in many reservoirs here in Colorado, in fact.
And that's what we have here in Alberta as well as we do. They are native to a few lakes, but they have been introduced in some reservoirs that we have. And probably the closest one to here in Calgary is Spray Lakes Reservoir, where they put an electrical dam on Spray Lakes and introduced lake trout in there. And they do quite well, although they tend to be fairly small. But a lot of that has to do with the depth of the lake, the dissolved oxygen, and the available food source for them as well.
Okay. Martin Coleman in Lawrence, Kansas asked about what makes fishing for lake trout different than other species or locations. You've told us one thing, which is they like to live in deep, cold water. Are there other characteristics that make them different?
They tend to, they're a very efficient predator and for the most part tend to feed on bait fish. Having said that, you can have some incredible fishing for these guys earlier on in the spring when the top water is still relatively cool on flies, on dry flies of all things, because these guys will sometimes gorge themselves on some of the caddis hatches that can happen in lakes. And to get these guys on a dry fly, and now there's some kind of fun there.
Yeah. Good. Now, you said North America. Are lake trout found at all elsewhere in the world, or is it primarily a North American fish?
And you know what? You got me there. I'm only aware of it in North America. And as a matter of fact, okay. I'm looking at my charts here right now, and I'm only showing it either native or introduced in North America. But
okay.
Yeah.
Now, where have you primarily fished for lake trout yourself? Is it in Alberta, or where have you gone to seek out the lake trout?
Initially, it started up in the Northwest Territories because, you know, that's where I'd be going for my annual trip with my buddy. And then once I started catching them up there, I was kind of hooked on it, and so I needed to find some places a little closer to home where I could start catching them. And so I started to look at what was available here within the province. I haven't, outside of the Northwest Territories in the province of Alberta, I haven't fished anywhere else for lake trout. But I have enough close by that satisfies the urge throughout the year, and then I can make my trip up to the territories in the summer to fish for the big ones up there.
I hear, after talking to one of our sponsors, Peterson's up there, that there's a very narrow window of time up there in the Northwest Territory, huh, where you can fish. Is that true?
Well, in effect, yes. And, I mean, you're right. There's a very small window where there's ice off on the lake. As a matter of fact, in talking with one of the co-owners there last summer, the ice didn't come off till the second week in July on the lake itself. So, and you're talking about a short season. But
yeah.
But it's that cold in the lake that makes it also ideal for the lake trout, because the lake trout don't do well in temperatures over 52 degrees Fahrenheit. As a matter of fact, they prefer it below 50. And it's a combination of the amount of dissolved oxygen that can be held by the water. That's also one of the limiting factors. The colder the water, the more dissolved oxygen can be stored in the water. And the lake trout are not only temperature sensitive, they're also sensitive to the amount of dissolved oxygen. And as the water starts to heat up, they will go deeper and deeper to get to their comfort zone. So what you find up in the territories tends to be better, more suited environment for the lake trout. And that's a direct opposite to what we have out here at Spray Lakes, just west of us in Kananaskis country, is that it's a relatively shallow lake, and it tends to be warmer. The lake trout will get down as deep as they can, but it's not deep to start with. There's not as much dissolved oxygen in the middle of the summer when the temperatures are higher, and they don't have the best food prey source for them to attain the weight and the length that they can get to. So it's all about the conditions that are favorable to the lakers. And really, up in the territories, that's where they are. And for that matter, Alaska and Yukon are wonderful places for lake trout as well.
Oh, okay, great. Now, based upon what you just said, then can I kind of take that one step further and say, because the further north you get, the water, you know, and the air temperature is colder, does that mean the fish are closer to the surface in most cases than they would be, you know, as we get down, say, here in Colorado or something where the water's, you know, very warm? And does that make it more accessible with the fly?
Indeed. That's exactly it. Now, having said that, just because you're in the Northwest Territories, not all the lakes are going to have these prime conditions. So I've even seen on lakes like Great Slave Lake, and that's a big darn lake, that in the dog days of summer, in some of the shallower portions of the lake, it will still get warm enough that the bigger lakers will start finding the deeper water. And really, that's what ends up being the main challenge for us as fly fishermen. We don't have the best gear for getting down and deep for these guys without having to borrow some stuff from our hardware fishing friends. So it's all about trying to find the right times, the conditions, the best areas to be able to target them effectively with our fly gear.
Right. Well, let's we'll talk about that more in just a minute. We do have to take a break, but when we return, we'll be talking with Frank Woodmore about lake trout on the fly. Visit the Trout Spot on the web at www.thetroutspot.com for your entire fly fishing needs. At thetroutspot.com, we carry a large selection of premium flies and fly assortments with prices starting at just 75 cents each. Looking for something for your vest or lanyard? Check out our selection of tackle and accessories from leading manufacturers at thetroutspot.com. At thetroutspot.com, we also have a wide variety of books and videos, as well as gifts and home decor items. All items are in stock and usually ship within 24 hours. Shipping on all fly orders is only $2.69. Our knowledgeable staff looks forward to helping you have a great fly fishing experience. Visit us on the web at www.thetroutspot.com. That's www.thetroutspot.com. thetroutspot.com. You're listening to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio, and we're talking with Frank Wood about lake trout on the fly. If you'd like to ask Frank a question, just go to our homepage at askaboutflyfishing.com and use the Q&A text box to send us your question. We'll receive your question immediately, and we'll try to answer as many of them as possible on the show tonight. Well, Frank, this time in the show, I always ask our guests what's going on in their fly fishing world, and I know you got a couple things you're working on there, so why don't you tell us what you're working on, what we can look forward to from you.
Well, see, it's going to be difficult. I have some writing that I've been neglecting the past while, but as a fly fisherman, it's always a little difficult to give up some of your fly fishing trips to concentrate on the writing, but that is the nature of the business. But I've started working on some short stories that are probably going to be something like, probably be titled something like Honest, I'll Be Home by Midnight, which is a classic line in my family. And that one, I think, is going to be quite well suited to doing in an EPUB format and having it available for downloading onto a Kobo or other EPUB readers. And I have two books, one Fly Fishing the Rocky Mountains, and another one that is the essence of fly fishing that I'm working on. And somewhere in the summer, I'm going to have to force myself to go out with a photographer friend of mine to get some of the pictures behind it. So I'll still be able to get out and do some of my trips. It's just I'm going to have to do a little posing while I'm doing that for some of the pictures that are needed in these books. But right now, conditions on our local rivers are sort of in runoff, so I'm doing my best to try and get as much writing done as I can so that when the peak season hits, I'll be on the water.
There you go. Good. Well, thanks for sharing that with us. Let's talk more about where these lake trout are. Now, James in Bozeman, Montana, asked a couple questions here. He says, in the spring, do the lake trout come in? And spring, as we know already, is relative. Spring is July. But do the lake trout come into the shallows right after at ice off, or is it a few weeks after ice off that they become more prevalent in the shallows?
Well, and this is a good question because this is what dictates the kind of local lake trout fishing we get. So really, right after ice out, the lakers will be up feeding in the shallows. The water is plenty cold to keep them happy. The light's starting to penetrate through the water column, and it's starting to get some of the bugs moving. It's starting to get the bait fish feeding on them, and it brings the lakers up. They have no problem being up and shallow in the spring. And I might add again, in late fall is another classic time to get these guys because they go on this massive feed in the spring right after the ice comes off the lake. But they also go in a big feed again just a couple of weeks before the lake freezes up. So, you know, if you have a tolerance for colder weather, that's another great time to be hitting these lakers is that late season because they'll be up shallow and quite accessible.
Okay. Yeah, in the fall, that was his other part of the question, is in the fall, they'll be up in the shallows, you say. Is that the time that they spawn, and what kind of areas do they spawn in?
Yes, that is the time of year they spawn, is in the fall. Generally, further north up in the territories, around the September, sometime in the middle of September to the end of September, and basically, they're going to be found around rocks and boulders. So, where you'll find them from spawn till freeze-up is usually very accessible from shore if you happen to be a shore fisherman and you don't have a boat. So that is another, it's a time of year that they are more accessible to fly fishing, and you can do it without specialized equipment, as in a big boat.
Right. So you're talking about the period after the spawn, the fish tend to stay in the shallows into the fall, is that what's happening?
Yeah, because the water's cooling off rapidly in the fall. After they've spawned, they stay in the general area and they just feed. They put on as much weight as they can prior to the lake freezing up. So you can still, they'll be in the general vicinity of these rocky areas just offshore, and you can target them with the fly rod quite effectively at this time.
Okay. Let's see here. Okay, Thomas Murphy in Redmond, Washington asks, he says, I think of lake trout being deep water species because they like it cold. So 20 feet or 20 or more feet down being trolled is where you usually find them. Do you find lake trout fishing to be seasonal, like before spring turnover or after fall? Can lake trout be coaxed from the depth at other times? So we just covered the spring and the fall kind of things. Can they be coaxed from the depths?
Yes, they can. And in fact, if you've got some of the, if you're fishing the deeper lakes like you have, Alaska, Northwest Territories, Yukon, that stay cold enough throughout the open water season, the big ones don't even go that deep, and they stay within a column that's reachable and practical to a fly fisherman throughout the season. And that's key, because what we have here in Alberta at the Spray Lakes is you can target them in the spring when the ice comes off, you can target them in the fall just before the ice goes on. The rest of the season, they're down as deep as they possibly can be, and it's not very practical to be able to get them on conventional fly tackle. But when you go to other areas, like Northwest Territories, with these bigger lakes that don't warm up as much, the lake trout stay in the upper column throughout the season, and you can get them. So in lakes like Point Lake up in the Northwest Territories, you generally can find the big ones in 20 feet or less of water throughout the whole open water season. And that's huge for us fly fishermen, because the biggest problem with the lake trout fishing is getting to where the lake trout are. And it's a huge bonus to be able to have them within the range and the limitations of the gear we have to use on them.
Now, what depth does it become impractical to fly fish for lake trout, where our equipment is really more of a pain than it is a help?
Well, and I'm going to answer this with a proviso. So, to me, practically and enjoying it as well, I like it shallower than 25 feet deep. In a lot of cases, you know, that shallower than that depth, you get chances to visually spot your fish. You've got enough of a fight when you've got these fish on without having to haul, you know, feel the weight of all your equipment also trying to pull it out of the depths. But to me, it's a lot more fun catching them in that shallower water. Now, the proviso is less than 25 feet or less.
25 feet or less, okay.
Now, the proviso is this. I know guys that will go out on their boats with their fish finders and will look for very, very deep lake trout that are suspended, because when they suspend in the cold water, they tend not to move around a lot, and they tend to be in... They're not solitary in that regard. They tend to be, there tends to be more than one in an area. And what these guys will do, once they've located these fish, they'll anchor in that location, and they will put, it used to be at one time, polar bear jigs on the end of their fly line, and they will use a lead core line, and they will basically feed it down through the water column until it's right where they've marked the fish, and then they'll start vertically jigging. And it's an incredibly effective way to get the lake trout, but it's not for everybody. That it takes a while to get your fly down there, even with a lead core line, but once you're down where you've marked them, it's quite effective getting them to take these jigs. And then, of course, then there's the fight of trying to get them up from the depths after you do hook them. So it's not for everybody, but there are ways with fly gear to be able to get down to those deep ones. It's just not to everybody's liking.
We did get a question on the Internet from Tom in Calgary. He says, what's the optimal temperature for lake trout? What do they feel most comfortable in? I think earlier you gave us a maximum tolerate.
The official answer to that is below 50 degrees Fahrenheit, and you know the darn thing is, I was introduced to the metric system when I was in grade 12, and I still have a heck of a time trying to convert from one to the other. And I don't have my handy-dandy converter going right now, so 10 degrees Celsius, there we go. So below 10 degrees centigrade or Celsius is really, or 50 degrees Fahrenheit, that is their comfort zone.
Okay, good. And we had another question from Charlie in Denver. He says he was listening to one of our shows, Stillwater Presentations, with Denny Rickard, and Denny had mentioned that the feeding fish are generally in the upper 10 feet or so of the lake. And what we're talking about here is rainbows primarily, is when we're talking about Denny's show. But Charlie brings up a good point. Is there, you know, you talk about these deep fish. It sounds like they do feed. I don't know if you're jigging in front of them. Maybe they just get aggravated. But when they're out suspended, are they actually feeding, or are you just kind of annoying them? And do you find them more actively feeding in, like, 10 feet of water or less?
I really believe that you're probably annoying them more than anything else. When they tend to be deep, they tend to be more lethargic and more of almost like a trout is in a resting lie. You know, he's there because he's more interested in resting and not actively feeding. The key to lake trout is their prey. Where you find their prey, you're going to be finding the actively feeding trout. Now, even though we'd already said that 50 degrees Fahrenheit is their, and below 50 degrees Fahrenheit is their comfort zone that they've adapted to, they will go up into warmer water when they are actively feeding. And I happened to see that last summer up on Point Lake. What was happening, we had a low-pressure system come in. It was cloudy. It was windy. It was stirring up the lake. And then after that system had come through, the sun came out. Now, what this wind had whipped up a foam line offshore on the lake. That foam line had trapped insects in it. What that did was that attracted the ciscos and the other, and the, which are a little herring, essentially. It attracted them to feed on the insects, and the big lakers came in feeding on the ciscos that were feeding on the bugs. Now, the temperature was, it was about 54 degrees Fahrenheit around where that feeding activity was going on. The lakers didn't have a problem. They were there because of their prey, and they were feeding really well on them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think I relayed this on in another show, but I was fishing in northern Manitoba, Lake Kisissing. I don't know if you're familiar with that, a rather large lake up there. They have lake trout there, but we were fishing for pike, and one afternoon a kind of squall came in and was pushing the water up into this cove, and must have been a similar thing to what you were just talking about, because all must have pushed the bait fish in, and the pike went after the bait fish, and literally when we were fishing with hardware then, but when the lure hit the water, these bait fish would pop up in the air like popcorn, you know? And,
oh, yeah.
They were scared to death, so the pike were in there chasing all the bait fish, just like what you were talking about, because the wind had pushed them all up into this cove. It was just totally amazing scene to watch what was happening, but bait fish going crazy.
And to go further on that, you brought up a very good point of when you're limited to fishing from shore, finding the areas where the wind is blowing in. When you do get a substantial chop on the lake and it is blowing into shore, finding these rocky points and areas where there's drop-offs and these coves, those are the magnets not only for the fish but also for the fly fishermen, because anything that brings these lakers into your fly fishing window, that's the name of the game.
Right, right. Mark in Arvada, Colorado, asked about weather patterns and laker feeding activity during the summer months. Are there other weather patterns that would help us or hinder us getting to the lakers?
Well, and you know, the funny thing is I have noticed lake and barometric effects on other species such as rainbows and brookies that are quite pronounced. But I have caught lakers when I shouldn't be out on the lake in a boat and wondered why I was. I was out on Great Slave Lake with my buddy, and we were in 20-foot swells, and he had a 20-foot fisher, and I thought, this is way too small a boat to be out on this lake. And yet we were catching the lakers, and that was during the low-pressure system. It didn't seem to put them down, but you do have to start thinking when you get those kind of conditions as to where they might be. The suspended lakers that are down deep don't seem to be affected too much by the weather systems. The ones that are up shallower are affected only as much as where their prey and their bait is being sent because of the conditions. So it's more, you know, you're not thinking about how exactly it's affecting the lakers. It's just the prey fish that they're feeding on. because then that's going to dictate the activity of the Lakers that are feeding.
One thing I wanted to ask earlier, actually, is how big do these Lakers get, and what size have you been catching on a fly?
Okay, well, as far as I'm concerned, I'm still not catching them big enough, but...
well, we all feel that way.
What can I say?
It doesn't matter what kind of fish it is.
The official world record rod and reel angler-caught lake trout was 72 pounds. It was caught in 95 in Great Bear Lake in the Northwest Territories. And I hate to admit that, no, I haven't got up into that level yet, but I just believe it's because I need to put more time into it, because they're certainly there. The biggest one I've caught to date is 22 pounds. My boatmate caught 25 pounds, and that was last summer. And after catching that 22-pounder on the fly rod, I cannot imagine catching anything bigger. But just the mechanics and how much stress it puts in your whole body getting these critters in, I just can't imagine on a fly rod. But it was just a matter of time. They're there. They're in the water column where we could get to them. We just were catching a whole bunch between 12 and 25 pounds that got in the way of catching the bigger ones.
Yeah, but what you're saying is that you can catch, you think you can catch a 50-pounder. They're there, and it's just a matter of, like any other thing, you go out on the lake for pike or something, and you catch a lot of, 30, 32-inchers, and then once in a while you luck into that 45-incher, They're just many of them really big ones,
Exactly. It's a numbers game. The problem with the predators are that the bigger they are, the fewer there are in the lake system, in the water system, really, in the ecosystem. And although I don't have the numbers with me, I was looking at it shortly after I came back from my trip last summer, and the amount of fish that were in a lake that were over 50 pounds was actually quite low, and of course it got more plentiful the smaller they got. But when you think of these environments that they're living in, they have short growing seasons, they're relatively infertile, they're cold, deep lakes, and really the amount of large fish that they can sustain is limited. But I'll tell you, there's nothing wrong with catching a 20-25 pounder at all. That's funny. that certainly keeps me happy.
Yeah, that's a nice fish. That's a nice fish. Let's take another quick break here, and when we come back, we'll talk with Frank more about lake trout on the fly. This portion of the show is brought to you by Peterson's Point Lake Lodge, offering trophy lake trout fishing in Canada's Northwest Territories. This is the place where you can experience catching a 20-pound-plus lake trout on a fly rod. Point Lake averages 71 miles long and 2 miles wide. The lake has deep drop-offs up to 300 feet and shallow, rocky shorelines with two prominent rivers flowing into Point Lake. The area is teeming with fish, and guests consistently pull out trophy lakers up to 40 pounds. Book your fly fishing trip to Peterson's Point Lake Lodge by calling 1-867-920-4654. That's 867-920-4654. Or check them out on their website at www.petersonpointlake.com. Petersonspointlake.com. I correct myself there. www.petersonspointlake.com. You're listening to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio. We're talking with Frank Wood about lake trout on the fly. If you'd like to ask Frank a question, just go to our homepage at askaboutflyfishing.com and use the Q&A text box to send us your question. We'll receive your question immediately, and we'll try to answer as many of them as possible on the show tonight. Now, Frank, we have a nice ad there from our sponsors at Peterson's Point Lake Lodge, and that's where you do a lot of your fly fishing for lake trout. Is that correct?
Yeah, and one of the things that I liked about the lake is it has a certain number of characteristics that all come together that make it really good for fly fishing for the Lakers. It's got that, it has a depth to it. Now, of course, we're limited with our gear as to how deep we can get, but the fact that the lake never warms up significantly during the open water season means that the Lakers are up under 20 feet. The majority of Lakers are up under 20 feet. You can get at them easy. There are rivers that are feeding into the lake, as well as a set of narrows between Point Lake and Red Rock Lake that tends to attract the bait fish and then the lakers again. So there are some people that fly fishing lakes. It isn't really their thing. They're more into fishing rivers. Well, the thing I found out about Point Lake is if you're into the river fishing and don't like going around in a boat and trolling flies, you can get off, you can fish from the shore, you can fish at the mouth of these rivers, you can fish the narrows, and it feels like you're fishing a trout stream, except you've got some big hogs that you're fishing too, and the tundra up there looks a lot different than our mountains down here. So,
nice, nice. One of the things that, well, Tom in Mesa, Arizona asked a question, a couple of parts of this question we already asked or answered, but he brought up the idea of low light conditions. And there was another question here. Kyle in Anchorage, Alaska asked about that too. I've read that most lakers are relatively nocturnal feeders. Is this true? And do you do much night fishing? So can you kind of address the low light level night fishing thing with lake trout?
Well, you know, that's interesting. I've never been asked that question before. And, you know, looking up in my book on biology here of the lakers, it doesn't say they're nocturnal. I've never tried fishing for them at night. And of course, the problem when you get up in the territories in the summer, you're during your 24 hours of light anyway. So
yeah, there is no night.
Now, having said that, the only thing I can equate to nighttime would be fishing, ice fishing for the darn things in the winter when they're down several hundred feet and you've got 4 to 6 feet of ice and snow on top of the lake, so it's got to be pretty dark down there. But
yeah.
Generally, I haven't fished for them at night. They feed just fine, thank you very much, during the day.
Yeah, and like you say, Canada and northern Canada, it's a long day. So
the only difference that I've seen is in light levels and then the type of fly that I end up using to target them. So if you've got a nice, clear, sunny day, I tend to use more streamer patterns that imitate the ciscos or the herring that they regularly feed on. But if it's overcast and cloudy, I tend to use flies that have more attraction to them, like some chartreuses and chartreuse double bunnies and things like that. But, you know, as far as a day versus night feeding, you know, I find they feed quite well during the day. It's just I will change what type of flies I'm using depending on what type of weather we're having or the light levels during the day.
Okay, we'll talk about that more in a few minutes about the food and flies. So one final question here, and then we'll talk about equipment. Jeff in Chilliwack, B.C. asked, do lake trout ever come into rivers and creeks? Where did they spawn? You had mentioned just a minute ago, if you didn't like fishing the lake, that you could fish the mouths of these rivers. Did they actually come up into the rivers, as Jeff asked?
They'll come up into the rivers. Typically, they'll go into the rivers to find their feed, or they'll go up after their prey. If it's a combination of the water is cool enough and that they're following their bait fish, yes, they'll go up in the rivers. Typically, they won't stay up in rivers. So you won't find them in rivers all the time, but they will go in and out of the lakes into the rivers, usually to follow their prey and feed on their prey. But they don't spawn up in rivers. They spawn in the lakes. They've developed over the eons to do that. But you will occasionally find them in rivers. But one of the hot spots for targeting lakers is looking for the incoming rivers, because once again, it's that moving water that attracts the bait fish and then attracts the lakers.
Right. Let's talk about equipment for a little bit here, and then we'll get into food and flies and some of your strategies and tactics. What size and weight rod do you take up there for these?
Okay, well, this is where it gets interesting, because if you're going to be fishing from a boat and, say, trolling flies, you need a 10-weight. A 10-weight fly rod, fast action, minimum. And I fish bull trout down here in the eastern slopes up to 30 inches, and I use a 6-weight rod for these guys, and I've done that for a number of years. It takes some coaxing, but when I first heard that you were going to need a 10-weight rod up there for these bigger lakers, I thought that might have been overkill. And that was until the first time I caught one over 15 pounds. And my first thought was, this rod isn't strong enough. They can bend over a 10 weight and make you think that you're not going to get them to the surface at all. But the key thing when you're fishing from a boat, when you're trolling streamers and flies, you need a rod that has a backbone on it. This is not the time to be going with a noodle rod. You need a fast action, medium fast action a fly rod with some backbone to it and 10 weight minimum.
10 weight, and then what size do you usually use?
You can 9.5 feet is fine. I have tendonitis in my elbow, and I tell you, I can't cast a 10 weight rod for very long. So in a boat, if you're fishing from a boat situation, a 9.5 foot 10 weight rod is going to be fine. You're not going to be doing a lot of casting with that. You're choosing that type of rod for the backbone to try and fight the Lakers when you have it.
Okay.
I do tend to fish with a lighter rod if I'm fishing from shore. And that, once again, you can get away with a little bit of a lighter rod when you're fishing from shore. In my case, I wouldn't go down to a 6 weight. I'm thinking a 7-8 weight to fish from shore. But I can cast one of those guys, not all day, but I can cast it a lot more than I could a 10 weight. And it's a little easier on the elbow to be casting one of those. And to a medium fast, from shore, using a medium fast action. I tend to use for fishing from shore. I like the action. I have a Sage VT2 that I use with a little bit of a fighting butt on there. And I find for my tendonitis, it does a good job of having the oomph to punch a big streamer out there without tearing the heck out of my elbow after fishing it all day. So, but
any particular characteristics you look for in a reel? These fish run
large arbor and good drag system. The good drag system is you can apply that anywhere where there's decent sized fish. But the large arbor really, really, really becomes invaluable when you hook these guys, and there are times when the bigger Lakers will hit straight down after you've hooked them. And then it becomes a winching contest. And you know, those large arbor reels are so nice when you've got a reel in a lot of line as quickly as possible when these Lakers decide they're going to start ascending up quickly. But it just makes such a difference when you have a lot of line that you have to reel in. So, yeah, I go with the larger arbor reels, definitely. As much capacity as I can for the backing on them, because when you're trolling around the fly, you're already at a little bit of a disadvantage because you've got a fair amount of your fly lines already out in the water. So when a big Laker hits your fly, it doesn't take very long to get into the backing at all. And so the larger capacity reels that you can have, large arbor, large capacity, that you can put as much backing on as possible, That's key to this.
Okay. Let's talk about lines. We've got several questions here on lines. Joe in New York asks, for the lake fishing, do I need to use a sinking line, or can I use the new sinking leaders from companies like Airflow? And he says, attach loop-to-loop to the fly line and then add a tippet section using another Perfection loop.
I like that question because it goes right into the way I tend to fish. Okay, fishing from a boat, if you're not going to be doing the casting, but you're going to be trolling around the fly, I just go with a straight weight forward 10 F6 style line. Reel makes an outbound line. wait for it. You know, it's debatable whether you really need the wait for it if all you're going to be doing is trolling the flies around. But it's a nice line. The S6, it's that fast sinking, and boy, that's the key. To get it down quickly to the area where the Lakers are. And but what I use when I'm fishing from shore, and that's where this question leads in, is I do go with the salmon poly leaders that are the fast sink. I tend to use a weight forward floating line, but I can attach those salmon, the airflow salmon poly leaders to the end in a loop-to-loop connection, and they're a fast sinking leader, and I can get my streamer down to their strike zone quite quickly. The advantage to that system is when I do go to pick up my line again to cast it, I'm not having to pick the whole line up. I'm picking mostly the leader section that's the sinking. The rest of it is floating. It's a lot easier to pick up. And boy, when you're casting these big streamers all day, that makes a big difference to me.
Mm-hmm. Okay. One of the other questions Joe had was if he uses the sinking leader, how much do you need and how much extra tippet do you need to add to get the depth that you were just talking about?
Okay. When I first started fishing for the bigger Lakers, we were using the 0X big game tippets and the full sinking lines. So these 0X tippets were probably about 15 feet long, attached to the full sinking line. And although they make for those tapered leaders make for nice casting, we did find out rather quickly that the teeth on these bigger Lakers were tending to shred those leaders a little quicker than we wanted to replace them. So what we started doing for the trolling anyway is putting on just a straight section of 25 to 30 pound mono just on the end of these.
Frank, hold on a second. You're kind of sounding like you're underwater here a little bit. Your connection, I'm wondering if could there be somebody else on your line over there that's some bandwidth?
Yeah, no, it's just me.
Our connection has gone kind of bad.
Oh, okay.
Did you
hear the bit about talking about the 0X tippets?
Yeah, I can hear you. It just sounds like you're talking underwater.
Oh, okay. Well, that could be,
but
that could be appropriate.
it just started just a minute ago, so that's why. Okay, well, let's give it a go, and maybe it'll clear up here.
Okay. What I tend to use is, initially I started out
that's
using
better.
The 0X tape. Yeah. I started out using the 0X tapered leaders initially when I was fly fishing for the Lakers, but I just found out that the teeth on the bigger ones start shredding those leaders and the tippets far too quickly for my liking. So I go to a straight butt section of 25-pound to 30-pound test mono on the end of my leader, and that's it. When I'm using these polyline leaders, no problem putting a straight section on there. You still can turn it over when you're doing the casting. It's not that difficult. And it seems that these straight sections of mono hold up better to their teeth than the tapered leaders.
Mm-hmm. Now, do you have any Lars in Sweden? Ask, do you have any use for the clear and immediate lines? And you know, are they superior to the colored lines?
As far as lake trout are concerned, I don't see an advantage to using them because the Lakers are definitely not leader shy. So, I mean, my boatmate was using one of these fuchsia fly lines, and a straight section of mono on there, and he was doing as well as I was for the Lakers on my fly line. And I was using, I have one of those taupe colored fly lines, you know, which is a bit more of a subdued color. But they're not leader shy. So I don't feel you need to go to that extent to use that type of a line when you're fishing for Lakers.
Mm-hmm. Now, you've been talking a lot about fishing from a boat, and so one of the techniques that you're using is trolling from the fish. We just got a question on the internet. Larry Hull in Indian River, Michigan says, how far behind the boat do you run the fly, and what depth are you trying to achieve with your fly when trolling?
Ultimately, we're trying to get between 12 and 20 feet down. So you're probably going to have to play around. You can troll a little faster with the streamer than you might think, but you're ultimately going to have to play with the speed in your boat to get down to that depth. But essentially, you're letting enough line out behind you that you're pretty much just starting in the backing. And that leads into why, you know, having a reel that has as much backing on it is huge. You don't have to go that far. It's just that we found that when you've got two fly fishermen that are trolling in a boat, that much line out behind you makes it easier for maneuvering the boat, not crossing lines and fouling up with each other when you get hits on and that. It just makes a big difference.
Okay. So most of the fishing you do is from the boat. Like you said, there are times when you're able to fish from shore, but it's primarily from the boat. You're primarily trolling.
Yeah, and to tell you the truth, it's only the main reason for that is because I'm lazy and it's so damn effective. Really, when I first started fishing for these lake trout, I had it in mind that I was going to be doing more casting, just like fishing for all the other trout species that I do. But I found that it was so effective trolling the flies, and you could cover the water much more effectively, that predominantly that's what I end up doing. And like I said, it's effective. You can cover the water. Now, one technique that does work well is doing the trolling until you get a hit or a strike or a fish, and then anchoring at that point and working it by casting. Because where you found one lake trout, you're going to end up finding more. And that's a very effective method of capitalizing on that. Do the trolling until you find the fish, if you can't see them, and then anchoring and fishing the area where you got the hit, and you're going to get more.
Okay. We've got two questions, both Paul from Wheat Ridge, Colorado, coming in on the internet, and also one sent in prior to the show from Thomas in Redmond, Washington. Both of them asking, do you ever use a fish finder to locate the trout?
Not normally. It's invaluable if you're doing that technique earlier where you're going to vertically jig them and use that light core line. But we do end up using fish finders mostly for the temperature sensor that we usually have on it, and just to get an idea of the depth of the water. So we're not using it per se to find the fish, but we're using it to keep an eye on our conditions and where we should be going.
Okay, great. Need to make another quick break, but when we come back, we'll be talking to Frank Wood more about fly fishing for lake trout. Keeney's Fly Shop in Sacramento, California features classes on all aspects of fly fishing. They have an extensive inventory and fly tying department and a friendly, experienced staff whose primary goal is your complete satisfaction. Among their many services, one can book private waters or take advantage of their international travel service. Visit their extensive website at www.keeney.com. That's K-I-E-N-E.com. Or call Keeney's Fly Shop at 1-800-400-0359. That's 1-800-400-0359. You're listening to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio, and we're talking with Frank Wood about lake trout on the fly. If you'd like to ask Frank a question, just go to our homepage at askaboutflyfishing.com and use that Q&A text box to send us your question. We'll receive your question immediately, and we'll try to answer as many of them as possible on the show tonight. Okay, Frank, let's talk about flies. You mentioned that lake trout feed a lot on bait fish, but you also talked about some bugs and so forth. So Frank in Lanceville, B.C. asks, please describe the flies that you use and also different ways of manipulating during your retrieve, if applicable.
Okay. My flies tend to be pretty simplistic. I love the double bunnies, and that's because I like how the rabbit hair, how you can coax it and how it pulsates in the water. Now, I've noticed generally the lake trout don't tend to be pretty persnickety when it comes to how they're going to attack the fly. But I've found that if you have a laker that's following your fly and might be kind of non-committal as to whether he's going to take it or not, the action that comes out of that bunny hair really seems to be a triggering effect on getting these lake trout. So there's a number of double bunny patterns out there. I use patterns that have blue and white in them. I like I said earlier, I have chartreuse and white that I use when it happens to be overcast conditions. But it doesn't just have to be double bunnies. Clouser minnows are a really effective fly to be using on lake trout. They have quite a small profile, so they sink very quickly to get into the zone where the lake trout are. They come in all the colors that you need them for. They're just they work really well for lakers as well.
What size, Rick in Southeast Pennsylvania asked, what size flies are you using, hook size?
Oh, well, we're using 2-aught if we can get them. And one thing I also want to make, the flies, anything, we try to get them tied as big as we can. The 6 to 9 inch is not too small for these guys. Wow. If you can get them bigger, yeah, they will take them. The first time you see one of these, my boatmate ended up catching a 20-pound laker last summer, and it had about a 6-pound laker in its mouth, the tail sticking out. And when you see that, you come to the realization that, boy, there's you can't have too big a fly to catch these guys. It just ends up becoming a real practical consideration as to whether you can lob something that big. But I mean, I do like my flies that have the bunny material. But just good old patterns, and the Lefty's Deceivers work just fine on the lakers as well. You can use, if you want to, you can even use things like Bow River Buggers, Woolly Buggers. They, just about any streamer pattern will work. As a matter of fact, there's another pattern I use that was first tied up by Kelly Gallup, I think is his name. Called the Butt Monkey. It's a pattern that I use that on bull trout here in the Eastern Slopes, and man, it works just as well on the lake trout. And I think it's a combination, once again, of the rabbit strip that's on it plus the colors. So that's a really good pattern for them up there. But there's a number of saltwater patterns that are out now that have the blue and white. They're using not polar bear hair anymore. They're using polar a substitute for it, but they work just well. You can another pattern by Kelly is a stacked blonde. That works just fine. The TNA bunker. They all will work on these fish. I guess what I'm trying to get across here, you don't exactly have to have a pattern that looks just like a Cisco. One of the best patterns that I saw worked up on Point Lake was tied by a local, is one of the ugliest streamer patterns I've ever seen, but it has the, and it is tied with polar bear hair, but it has the colors that look exactly like a Cisco, even though it's an ugly fly, and it works just fine on the Lakers up there. So it's more important to be getting your fly into and finding the fish, getting your fly to the fish, and you can work on the rest and getting them to strike. But there is a lot of different patterns you can use on these guys.
Okay. Frank also asked about, Frank and Lance, so BC, asked about whether you use tube flies at all. Do you have any use for those?
Well, I have some sitting in my fly box that I haven't gotten around to. I haven't had a chance to use them. My other patterns are working so effectively. I see that they would give that movement on there, and I haven't reached that point yet where the fly patterns I do use have not started work have stopped working to the point where I need to break out the tube flies yet. But I could see they should work very well, given the hinging effect on there and the fact it would give a better swimming motion. I think they should work fine.
Okay. George in Alabama asks, what's your favorite topwater fly, and what leader do you use to fish it? And so we haven't talked about topwater, so in conjunction with this question, can you tell us when you go to the top and what you are using?
About the only time you can go to the top in those situations where you've got those foam lines that trap the bugs, and then the Ciscos come up and feed on the bugs, and then the Lakers will come in and feed on the Ciscos. Now at that point, you could fish the top water quite effectively with something like a oh, darn, I can't think. It's actually a sculpin pattern that's got a deer hair head on it. It's got a mallard flank wing, deer hair tail. I can't think of the name of the pattern right now. I'll keep looking it up, but it tends to be a floating fly because of the deer hair that's used on it. What you do in that situation is you can toss it up into the foam line and then start stripping it back very quickly towards you. And what you're trying to do is you're trying to capitalize on that triggering effect of the fly coming, the triggering effect of an escaping bait fish is what you're trying to imitate.
Yeah, or wounded bait fish.
Exactly. Exactly. And I'm sorry, I just can't think of a... I can see the pattern in my mind. I've got it in my fly box here. I just can't... But it was basically tied originally to represent a sculpin, but the pattern floats very well because of the materials it's made out of. So if you're using that on a floating line and you come across these situations where you see... And another easy way to find these topwater situations is look for the birds. The birds are also attracted. Whenever you get the foam lines, the insects, the bait fish, the birds, like terns, and Franklin's gulls, you're going to find them in there also trying to capitalize on the bait fish that are up near the surface. So being able then, looking for these birds gives you an idea where it's happening on the surface. Getting over there, you can fish the top with this stripped-in fly. You can have a heck of a time doing that.
Okay.
Go ahead. The other situation you have is those rare times when the Lakers will be up shallow and they will be feeding on bugs in the surface. It does happen. I hate to say it. It doesn't happen very often, but when you find that situation, it's a whole lot of magic. Basically, that can happen in the spring when the water is still cool up at the top and you get a caddis hatch on, and these huge Lakers will come and they will literally take the caddis just as they're coming off the surface. And in those, and you're not going to miss it, because you'll see these things porpoising all over, taking the naturals. in that situation, using an old Elker caddis, usually a darker color because they tend to go for these darker, almost mottled, blackish lake versions of the caddis, and fishing them fishing the dry fly on top water can be just incredible. But it's so hard to get those right conditions when they do that.
Okay, we got let's talk. Running out of time here, but I want to get some of these key questions we have left here. Where do we begin looking for these lake trout? What are the key factors for finding them in a lake?
Basically, you're looking for points, drop-offs, any place where you have changes in depth, especially if you happen to be fishing lakes that are in the southern part of North America, even here in Alberta. You're trying to find those areas where they have access to deep water relatively easy. So you're looking for the drop-offs along shore. You're looking for inlets to the lake. In some cases, outlets, but normally inlets do a better job of attracting the bait fish and attracting the lake trout to those areas. But not all inlets are the same. The key to these inlets is that near the inlets, there has to be access to this deeper water that they can go to when the water starts to warm up. So not every inlet, the type of inlet that ends up being just a delta when it comes into the lake, that's not going to attract the lake trout. The type that comes into the lake and has deep drop-offs fairly close to where it enters the lake, those are the magnets. You're going to find them there. And the lakers seem to find out, they a lot of times you will just see them cruising along the shoreline of the lake near this type of structure where there is drop-offs. So you'll see them kind of coming in above sunken boulders, but they'll be on the edge of a drop-off, and that's the type of area you're looking for.
Okay. Now, you had mentioned earlier that there are times when you do fish from the shore, and there's, you know, by these inlets and so forth, when the streams are coming into the lake. Do you ever sight fish for lakers in those conditions, or are you doing more search casting in those situations?
The majority of the fishing for them is searching. Unfortunately, that is the majority of the time. But there are those times when the lake action is low enough and the wind isn't whipping enough where you can see them and sight fish to them. And that is a lot of fun. But even on the northern lakes, if you get those times where the wind isn't whipping it up, you can see them even when they're down to 20 feet deep. And then your biggest challenge, of course, if they happen to be deep, is not only getting your cast out in front of them, getting your fly down quickly to them and being able to bring it in front of their nose. But the majority of fishing you're going to end up doing for these guys is searching. You do get some sight fishing, but it's the exception.
Okay. Well, then that kind of leads into James Budd's question. He's from Bozeman, Montana. And he says, how aggressive are you with the size of flies and the speed in which you retrieve the flies? Now, we talked about the size. We're fishing with some big flies. Maybe do you kind of scale those down when you're fishing from shore and using these search casting, or are you still going big? And what kind of retrieve are you using when you're fishing from shore like that?
Okay, I'm going to refer to Kelly because I do a lot of streamer fishing, and really my how I do my streamer fishing is, I credit his techniques. So I tend to do for, and I can't remember the name he gives to his retrieve technique, but I'll just call it a stop and go technique for the purposes of this conversation. But essentially, I believe that giving the movement and a varied movement to the fly, to the streamer during my retrieve, is ultimately ends up triggering the this predatory instinct in these big fish. I do know that the lake trout do prefer a faster moving imitation than some other fish do. And I can think of sometimes when I've been fishing bullies that I just have to sometimes hang my fly in the current in front of its nose. And even then, sometimes it won't trigger them. But the Lakers do like a faster moving imitation. So I do give a fairly quick retrieve when I'm using streamers, but it's a very staccato kind of retrieve, you know, giving foot long poles, varying it. And yeah, I believe that that does a lot in triggering the predatory nature.
Okay. Question from Dan in Colorado Springs. He says, the big ones just kind of cruise the shoreline, and you had just described that activity a few minutes ago. But he says they're ignoring any kind of woolly booger I throw at them. I've caught many rainbows around them as they cruise, but they still ignore my flies. Do you have any suggestions for Dan?
Yeah, as a matter of fact, what I do in that situation, because when they're cruising like that, they are still very quite susceptible to being caught with a fly. Use a bunny pattern, something that has a bit more movement, or even sticking with a bugger would be fine if you could get a longer tail on it. But what would often is going to trigger these guys is going to a pattern that has a longer tail or more movement to it, like a bunny pattern, or using the butt monkey on there, just that's going to give that more of an undulation that more effectively imitates a bait fish. Get it out, at least 3-4 feet in front of its nose, and give it time to also have some time in there so it can get down to its level, and do a strip jerk retrieve in front of it. I'm sure that'll do it.
Okay. And one final closing question, Martin, and this I think is a good way to kind of summarize things up. Martin Coleman asks, what are the three things that a fly fisher should know when going for lake trout? So maybe you can give us your three big tips to end the show with as to what you think are the most important things to keep in mind.
Oh, man. geez, that's a tough one. Equipment. You cannot go with light gear with these guys. You need heavyweight rods with backbone matched with large arbor reels, heavy tippets. You could go with the 0X leader if you want. It's going to get shredded by the bigger one's teeth. It's just as well to go with a straight section of 25-30 pound mono. So equipment, number one. You need the equipment for these guys because you're just setting yourself up for failure if you go up there and you don't have the tackle to handle them. Two, location. We're at a bit of a disadvantage when it comes to fly fishing for lake trout because in a lot of the range where they live, they're only available to us for certain periods of the year where they're actually within range of our fly fishing equipment. So being able to find lakes where you can get at them easier, either from shore, from boat, from a longer period of time in the season, is absolutely key. Finding the lakes that have the multiple characteristics where you can get them, such as these river inlets, narrows with current that attract the bait fish, rocky drop-offs, that's all part of the puzzle. So those are the two things. And the third thing is you don't have to go after them just one way. You don't have to troll flies around all day just to catch lakers. You can fish for them effectively from shore, but vary your techniques that you use to catch them. Vary your retrieve. Yes, lakers do get lockjaw just like any other type fish. They tend to be fairly aggressive, but if they aren't biting, start using these strip jerk techniques for retrieving your streamers. If they aren't taking a more slow, deliberate type retrieve, vary it up. You're going to be much more successful at catching these lakers.
Great. Well, those are some great tips and reminders for us when we go out there. I appreciate that. Well, unfortunately, Frank, it's time to wrap things up here. But when we return, we'll be giving away a one-year membership to the Federation of Fly Fishers, a one-year subscription to Fly Fusion magazine, and a $20 gift certificate to Front Range Anglers in Boulder, Colorado. So stick with me, Frank, here, and we'll do a few more things and get to those drawings. The First Lady of Fly Fishing, Joan Wolfe, will be just one of the 20 women on hand at the American Museum of Fly Fishing in Manchester, Vermont on June 11th and 12th as they celebrate the opening of new groundbreaking exhibition, A Graceful Rise, with a weekend-long event featuring discussions, demos, displays, and casting workshops hosted by some of the most significant women in the sport of fly fishing. A complete schedule is available at www.amff.com. That's A-M as in Mary, or museum, I should say, FF.com, AMFF.com. And this event is being sponsored by the Orvis Company. So just a quick reminder to everyone, just before you leave the website tonight, please take a minute and give us your feedback about the show. You can find a link on our homepage in the section under tonight's show that says, what did you think of this show? Just click on that link and leave us your comments. We'd really appreciate it. Well, now it's time to give away some of our prizes, and these first two, the winners are randomly drawn from our show's registration database. If you didn't register for tonight's show, it's too late, but make sure you do so for our next show so you don't miss out on winning one of these incredible prizes we have to offer. If you are the lucky winner, we're going to contact you after the show and provide you with information on how to receive your gifts. So, for the first giveaway, we're going to give away a one-year membership to the Federation of Fly Fishers. And if you want to learn more about the Federation, go to fedflyfishers.org, fedflyfishers.org, a great organization to be a part of and support. They are an international organization. The winner for that is Greg LaFortune in California. Greg, and I probably pronounced your name wrong, but Greg LaFortune in California. So congratulations, Greg. We'll get you set up for that Federation of Fly Fisher membership. And if you're already a member, we'll get you an extension and let you become a member for that much longer. And our second giveaway is for Fly Fusion Magazine. And you can learn more about Fly Fusion Magazine at flyfusionmag.com, flyfusionmag.com. And that is, again, a great magazine to have and support. And our winner for that is Phil Panko. So, Phil Panko, you just got yourself a subscription to Fly Fusion. And I know Phil has been a long-time listener. He's up in Minnesota. So congratulations, Phil. You deserve it. You've been listening a long time. And enjoy that great prize. Well, now, finally, we will give away a $20 gift certificate to Front Range Anglers in Boulder, Colorado. And like I said, you can go to their website. They've got a great online store to redeem this, or drop into their shop. They have a brand new shop in Boulder, Colorado, and you can redeem your certificate there in person as well. Frank, what we do here is we pose a question to the audience, and I've been making it a little bit harder lately by giving them a two-part question. I'm going to do that again tonight. And the person who gets this right, and I'm going to have you help me out to make sure they get the right answer, will win this $20 gift certificate. So the question is, several times Frank mentioned a particular common bait fish that he finds that lake trout feed on. What's the name of that bait fish, and what was the hook size he says he normally uses for those big bunnies? So what is the name of the bait fish, and what is the hook size that he's used? Okay, now we're waiting, Frank. We'll see how they do here and who is paying attention. So I'm waiting. They're still typing. Okay, this person says sculpin and ape. I don't think he got either of them right, did he?
No.
Oh. Okay. Nice try. Thanks for playing. This one, I think this might be good. He says Cisco and Tuat.
You betcha.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. So Silas Gray, and Silas has been a long-time listener, too. I remember some of these names after a while. He's in Joplin, Missouri. And Silas, you just got yourself a $20 gift certificate to Front Range Angler, so congratulations. And Silas, you can send me your contact information, you know, name, address, email address, in the same text box that you sent this your answer in, or you can send it to info@askaboutflyfishing.com. info@askaboutflyfishing.com, and we'll get you taken care of there. So congratulations. Well, Frank, thanks so much for being on the show tonight, and we appreciate you taking time out to be with us, and it was a great time talking to you. I learned a lot about lake trout.
Oh, it was a pleasure. I'm certainly glad I had the chance to talk tonight. It's something that's dear to my heart, and once I get started, it's kind of hard to stop.
Yeah, well, let me know when you catch that 50-pounder, okay?
Oh, yeah,
we'll have to celebrate.
My arms will feel it for years, I'm sure.
Yeah. Well, our next broadcast will be on June 1st and at 7 p.m. Mountain, 9 p.m. Eastern Time. And on that show, we'll interview Eric Anderson. And our topic for the show is going to be Big Fish on the Bighorn. Eric Anderson is a fifth-generation fly fisherman and has been guiding on the Bighorn River in Montana since he was 16 years old. Learn Eric's secrets to hooking up with the big browns and rainbows on our next show. We'd like to thank Federation of Fly Fishers, Fly Fusion Magazine, the Orvis Company, the Trout Spot, Peterson's Point Lake Lodge, and Guinea's Fly Shop for sponsoring our show tonight. If you think your company would benefit from sponsoring one of our shows, give us a call at 1-800-1673 extension 8. That's 1-800-985-1673 extension 8. We'll be happy to explain the options available to you. Don't forget to visit our website at askaboutflyfishing.com and make sure you're signed up to receive our announcements so you don't miss out on any of our future broadcasts. Thanks for listening to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio. We hope you enjoyed the show. That's it. Good night, everyone, and good fishing.